Hi there, and welcome to our podcast, Mindfulness at Work. I'm Cara Pollard.
Hit record. Okay, so welcome to the Mindfulness at Work podcast. I am your host, Cara Pollard, and I am so honored and happy to be here with one of the best team members and one of the best coaches I know, Casey Hartung. Casey, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Cara.
Yes, it's so great to see you and hear from you. And we've done a couple things together in the past. Why don't you tell me what you've been currently working on and just a little bit about yourself as a coach?
Sure, of course. So before I was a coach, I was a corporate mama. I still am a corporate mama. And I am a director of sales analytics, where I have moved home and am now working full-time from home, which I feel very fortunate to do, but I think that's going to lead into a lot of what we're going to talk about here coming up. As in my early days of being a working mom, I just felt like nobody was talking about the struggles that I was having. And so to overcome that, I started a blog almost 8 years ago now and was talking about some of the things that I was faced with, some of the things that I was feeling, and really trying to kind of unwind and understand, like, how am I going to do all of this? Which I think I felt at the time I was the only one who must be feeling that way. And of course, everybody feels that way. They just don't talk about it, is what I've found. So I started blogging. I became a life coach, and I really, you know, love helping parents of all kinds, but I have a special place in my heart for working moms and who are trying to stay true to themselves in their career and who also want to be the best mom that they can be. So I'm a life coach, I'm a blogger, and most recently I created a deck of cards that I call the Working Mom SOS, which is Save Our Sanity, which released right before COVID. It's a 40 card deck of different learnings and key phrases that I pulled out of my blogs over the years. And it's just been really great over this time that we've been home of being able to go to that card deck and see, like, oh, okay, what I did today was enough. That's one of the cards. And so it's like, you need that reminder sometimes. And I think especially when I was in the office, the days would fly by in a blur. And now the days at home fly by even faster. And so having those little reminders is great. I'll give you all the details. You can link it up for if anybody's interested in checking it out.
Yeah. And thank you for that, Casey. I actually watched many of your card readings and thought that they were wonderful. I have a quote that I find myself saying over and over again, and it kind of goes along with my passion about working moms. And so there's a statistic out there that I think it's 75% of working parents report feeling like a failure as a parent. And to me, that's just unacceptable, frankly. And if you feel like a failure as a parent at home, you're going to bring that feeling to work. And so I really talk to my clients about that. And I think COVID has illuminated the particular hardships that women face within their home workload, whether it be emotional work that they take on or even physical chores in the house. And there's just a huge disconnect as far as in COVID, there was a questionnaire that and a research study done that men reported doing 47% of the homework during the stay-at-home order. And their spouses, or, you know, if they were a couple, reported that the men were doing 3% of the work. So unfortunately, that's a very wide gap. And I'm not here to male bash. Like, they don't know what they don't know. Right. And certainly because men hold the positions of power, we know that. There hasn't been much of a cultural change. We take on everything, it seems. And so that disparity like a spiral. I always use the spiral in my work. It just continues to spiral down and spiral down. If the woman is doing, you know, 22 hours of work during stay-at-home order, and a guy thinks he's doing half of that, but he's working an eight-hour day, it's going to create a situation that perhaps the woman has to leave her job because she cannot do all of that every day and sustain it. And so to me, that's what the saddest part is. What have you found from your own experience and then that of your clients during this time?
Yeah, I think what I think is really interesting and why I'm so excited to have this conversation with you today is we're recording this, it's early July. All of these stay-at-home orders started back in March. And I think that it was very unknown, right, in March. It was kind of like, okay, for those of us fortunate enough to just like pick up their laptop and move home, we could do that. And we were trying to figure out like this whole school thing and what were the kids going to do for school. And then if your spouse was also kind of coming home, it was just kind of very chaotic. It was very much like a roller coaster kind of every day, I felt like. And I think a lot of my clients felt the same way. It was like, we're just trying to keep ourselves above water and, you know, cook what felt like 12 meals a day, right?
right, constantly in the kitchen.
Like then, how did we keep going through all these dishes, right? And so now, even though some states have started to open back up again, they're closing back up again, and now looming, I'm based in Arizona, and our schools are talking about, you know, what's going to happen next year. We traditionally start at the end of July. That was moved back to the beginning of August. And now our recent governor order has said like nobody can go until quote the end of August unless it's online. So now I feel like it's kind of getting to this, it's by no means normal.
Right.
But now it's kind of serious. And
right.
I do that in air quotes, right? It's like schools, fortunately, I have a elementary school and a high schooler, right? So for the most, and my son, even though he's in elementary school, that was sixth grade. So very independent learners, right? Mm-hmm. I could kind of put them in front of the Zoom and that I didn't have to worry about it. My heart really goes out to those kinder and first and second grade parents who really need to be side by side. And so it's still so unknown, but yet I feel like offices and workplaces are starting to say like, okay, well, maybe you're not going to come back to the office for the foreseeable future, or maybe we're saying after Labor Day, whenever it might be, like work is now, employers are now like starting their go forward plans as much as they have to.
Yes.
Schools are starting their go forward plans as much as they can. And it just seems like we're headed for this like head-on collision of it's not, we made it work for the last quarter of the last year and it was fine, right? Mm-hmm. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I should caveat that with everything, right? Because it's like, I'm sure that lots of teachers would probably disagree with me. I'm not discounting the last quarter of learning, right? But ultimately, and a lot of my, I should also say, a lot of my clients love, and parents in general love to go to, they're not going to get into college, they're not going to get a job, their apartment's going to be a wreck, and they're not going to be a good roommate, and they'll end up homeless and jobless and on the street, right? So it's
I like to call that catastrophizing. They catastrophize, you know, they have to stay home one more day, their life is over.
Exactly. That's a great word for it, right? So I have been trying to level set with all the parents that I work with saying, your child is not going to end up homeless because in the fourth quarter of their 2019-2020 school year, they only sat on Zoom calls for an hour a day, right? Mm-hmm. Or they didn't learn how to make an L in cursive or whatever. Like, it's not the end of the world. And I think everybody was okay with that for a quarter. But now as it starts to get real, I think everyone is kind of starting to stress out about not only the safety concerns and do they wear a mask in the classroom, like that, there's a whole health part of it. And then there's the whole education part mm-hmm. of it, of what if they fall behind, which is, you know, I'd love to kind of brainstorm with you about some like outside of the box, like ideas, right? Because is there really a behind
right.
for our kids?
Right. Yes. There isn't a behind. And at the end, in quarter four, I did a lot of Zoom calls with parent groups. And again, it is my opinion, but I kept telling them, please do not worry about the worksheets. That yes. was my, and they call it Seesaw or whatever their online, you know.
Right.
And I said, your child is learning in much different ways. And, you know, I did a lot of early childhood development classes. And there was one, I think Jane Healy says that, you know, you learn math by climbing a tree because you're learning spatial reasoning. So mm-hmm. rather than doing times tables, it's just as important to climb a tree. Now, I do think that after a while, to your point, that we were able to get through it. Anything new in our life creates stress. And that stress, I don't even mean that in a good or a bad term. It's just stress. Like just when you have a new baby,
right.
It's the unknown, so it creates stress. No one knew how to maneuver through this, so we were all in a stressed state. But what ends up happening is if that stress becomes sustained over a long period of time, it becomes chronic. And so the one area that we're talking about is if your child is going to lose some ground in learning, against whom,
right?
To what standards? Because A, everybody's losing that ground.
Right.
And I think the kids are having regressions because they, all of our emotions are energetic and our children pick up on them whether we mean for them to or not. So if we have an underlying worry that they're going to be homeless because they didn't get the worksheets in, they're going to pick up on that.
Right.
And, but I do think that everybody has their limit and their bandwidth and their, you know, Dr. Alexandra Solomon had called it, their tolerance for equanimity. And so I have a little bit of a image that I made with a rope. And you know, you can have a thick rope and it can be long, and everybody sometimes has a shorter rope and it thins out. And if that happens to you, you know that you're in a stress state and you're gonna dump that and project that onto your kids. And so I think that we need to find ways to, if school doesn't start, to really think outside the box yeah. about what learning is and how learning can be in so many different ways. Although I was very happy to see and hear that the American Academy of Pediatrics really does believe that we should go back to school and that it's an important part of a child's growth and development. Yep. And so for them coming out and putting that stamp on it, at least to me, it meant people will hope. I mean, I know it's a serious goal, but I think that they might even take it more serious, mm-hmm. knowing that this group of doctors really think it's the best for kids. But how you have preschoolers socially distance is really beyond me.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, and it's so hard. And so, you know, and then I think kind of going to that next step, what it looks like for us in Arizona is that our kids are going to start online regardless. And the other thing too that I think is, I just kind of have to laugh, is we don't know, right?
Yeah.
We truly, and I know that we both follow Dr. Shefali, and she speaks so often about living in the moment and not worrying about the future and things like that. And this whole last 3-4 months has all been about living in the moment. And it's great to try to make plans, but you just really honestly never know what can happen. So right now our district is planning on starting online regardless on August 5th. And then kind of taking the wait and see. So then that creates so much more stress on the parents, right? Yes. What will those parents do? Especially what will those working parents do? You shared early that it's a lot of the moms who are feeling the pressure to drop out of the workforce, and or that I've even seen working moms, and that just because that's what I follow mostly, who are almost being bullied out of the workforce. Which I can't believe that those types of things are still happening in this day and age, and especially in this climate right now, that employers would rather lose people and have to hire somebody new and retrain them than try to not make accommodations necessarily. But again, like, this is where I started thinking outside the box, is what is it that we need, right?
Yes.
We're so planned into this 40, it must be a 40 hour work week. It must be Monday through Friday. It must be 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. ish, right? And I just think that as employees at this point, and as people in management, we have to identify what's important. What is the job that needs to be done? And so certainly if you're in more of a supporting role or programming role, things like that, your hours can be more flexible. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're answering phone calls and things like that, but it just makes me wonder, like, you know, what do we have to think about? Like, it is a 40-hour week really what's needed? And I think we can all admit we're not sitting there, you know, 8 full hours working head down, right? We have those, we're checking the headlines, we're doing that. So if you do head down for 6 hours a day, do we lose productivity? I think that's something that employers have to consider. I think, you know, what if you work 6 to 9 in the morning and you take 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. off to be a mom or be a dad or, you know, help with schoolwork and things like that. And then you work from 2 to 6 or whatever that back half of that is. And of course it's going to be different. And I think that the employers who are really willing to look outside the box and really identify what's the most important thing to get done, I think they'll find that there's actually more alternatives, but because we've been so conditioned as to what's just quote normal work, like we haven't had to think about any of that in the past.
Yeah, I think that you raised such a good point, because if you can think outside the box, what employers don't remember oftentimes is that when they invest in their employees, they're investing in their bottom line. They really have this attitude that it's the opposite. So if they really pause to think about supporting a mom whose daycare closed because they didn't make it through the pandemic, or whose school is going to go online, if they really thought about ways to support her, that she's inspired and intrinsically motivated then to give more to the company that supported her. And instead they think, oh, lots of jobs were lost, so we can go back to giving less benefits and being harder and pouring more work into one person. And what they're just, it's just so short-sighted. Then they're going to end up with someone who's stressed out and, you know, has a breakdown, and then they're paying for them in disability. And you know, I feel like there's so many who are either or. And there are these companies that are just starting to see what COVID illuminated for them and how they can be different. And those are the companies that really interest me, and that I find, I'm so curious about who it was that could view this differently, because you know, it doesn't have to be, as you say, 40 hours a week and 9 to 5. It can be something much different. So,
It's the only way I think that we're going to, not the only way, right? I think that's another thing that I've been thinking about recently, is that I think what's going to happen is that there have got to be multiple different options and multiple scenarios for different people that work differently, right? And the same with school. Like, I think any of this that we're talking about with working, it, mm-hmm. it is a little bit the same with school. Like, who said, and this is, you know, this will be controversial, but who said they have to take 6 different subjects, right? Or who said they have to go, the kids have to go to school 6 hours a day or 7 hours a day. Now, I realize, like, saying things like that, I'm not taking into consideration teachers and salaries. And I certainly am not trying to, I admire teachers tremendously, mm-hmm. but I do wonder, like you said, I think the best thing about this is that every single student globally is in a very similar situation. Mm-hmm. So there should be very little worry about my child is falling behind.
Yes.
But I think it's also, we have had, especially in the United States, we have had this one way of public schools, and certainly there's charter and Montessori and things like that, that do things a little bit different. But for the most part, again, a lot because of work schedules and things like that, the time that you go to school is very regimented. The way that you go to school is very, what you study is very regimented. And, you know, what if we let the kids decide, like, the 3 subjects they wanted to study? If you're going online, right? You only have to pick 3. Which 3 would you pick? And who knows what they would find, right? You would give the kids, like, now some kids would do great with that, right? They want that freedom. They want right. that creativity. Other kids, not so much, right? But I think that that is, again, what COVID is teaching us from a school perspective, from a working perspective, that we need to be a little bit more flexible. Mm-hmm. And I know that you and I have talked about this a lot. I started off searching for work-life balance. That was a lot of things that I talked about. And now it's really about work-life flow, right? Yes. How it's not about going to work and being at work and then having your life outside that you're trying to balance. And geez, if COVID hasn't taught us about work-life integration or work-life mm-hmm. flow, whatever you want to, you know, it's all in your face all the right. time.
I think it was a fallacy anyway. What's so funny is that even though from a time perspective, maybe you were at the office and then you came home. But what I said in the beginning about if you feel like a failure at home, you're going to bring that feeling into work. I think we tried to silo it and we tried yeah. to make it like, this is what I do at home and this is what I do at work. And I believe that should be true insofar as, like, you just because you can check email every minute of every day, it's probably not good for your brain.
Exactly. Right.
You know, I actually had Eve Rodsky on a podcast, and she came up with a card game that has to do with balance in the jobs at the home. Mm-hmm. And she said that she interviewed a neuropsychologist and said, so how come women are better at multitasking? And the neuropsychologist said, they're not. No one's brain is good at multitasking. So, we have this image that we can yes. do 10 things at once, and that's because we do them, but we're not doing them to the degree that we could be if we, did one thing at a time. But I feel like our feelings and who we are as a person is what always has been integrated and what always has had flow. So you need to feel good and operate in the way that you're meant to in both areas is what I think has been illuminated. And that, yeah, you can do it in a different way than was ever done before. So I do think that some employers are going to use this as an opportunity to do what you just said. You know, well, if your child's off of school and you can't be here on the premises, we're going to have to let you go. And to me, that's just going to exacerbate and perpetuate the gender gap. And it's going to be very sad for women, because I felt like we were just kind of at the precipice of gaining a little bit of ground. You know, we were getting a couple of the CEO positions. We were getting a, you know, they needed more numbers to be managerial positions, but I don't want to take a step back, and I'm very fearful of it.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how it all works out. And what I think too, it's a chance for people just in general to determine what it is that they stand for and what they're going to tolerate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's life is too short, right? Life is too unpredictable. And this may be a wake-up call for a lot of people to say, this is the job I thought I wanted or I thought I loved or what have you, but now based on the way that they're acting or the way that they're treating me or the demands that they have, you know, I hope it empowers people to decide that, you know, employment should be a two-way street of where you want to be and that they want you there as well, right? And
yes.
Just one way.
Right. You're not a widget maker. You're actually a human being. And so if they see you in that way, I feel like it is a two-way street and they'll get more commitment. I do know that I've talked to parents of all age kids. And yeah, generally speaking, the ones who had the college age kids or the end of high school felt very blessed that their kids were suddenly, who were often flying the coop, were back at home and they were all doing activities together. But even the ones in preschool and the younger years, which were you know, quite difficult. You can't really get a four-year-old to watch Zoom.
Right.
I mean, a class on Zoom, I should say, right. Not the program right. Zoom, but the class on Zoom. And, but even they said, wow, taking that walk and going to the park midday in kind of a, there's nothing else that I can do anyway. They need to burn off exercise. And if they don't, I will not get anything done. So they had to relinquish. They had to just let go of the control. And, you know, they weren't running after school to soccer. Right. Yep. What four-year-old is actually even learning soccer skills? You and I know that.
Right.
But your neighbor did soccer and the kids at school were doing soccer. So you picked them up after working and ran them to soccer. They're overtired. You know, they yep. go to school and, you know, it was this cycle, this hamster wheel that we were on without anyone actually saying, oh, you mean I have a choice to right. do differently?
Yeah. We agree on that 100%. Yeah. I think too many of those things. And so I think that, I think a lot of people thought by this time we would be ready to, quote, get back to normal. There is no normal anymore, yes. right? Whatever we get back to is going to be new and different. And I really hope, especially moms who are the multitaskers, like you say, who are the ones who, I love your quote about the, you know, feeling like a failure. I don't love it. Feeling like a failure at home. Like that sounded wrong. But I feel like a lot of moms, what I say is they want to give 110% at home and they want to give 110% at the office. And when they can't do that, then they feel like a failure at both. But you can't give 110%. It's not physically possible. And so I feel like as we do transition into whatever this next phase is, this new adjustment of what we make it, that we pause and really look at what we want to take back up again. Why are we taking them to soccer? Do they like it? What are they gaining from it? And is it worth our mental stress, mm-hmm. like you said, of working all day and then running them to soccer and then, you know, I won't lie. It was great those first couple weeks not having to go anywhere and not having to run anywhere. It was such a vacation almost. Mm-hmm. And so I think that everybody needs to be very aware and very conscious when the time comes of what you're saying yes to. And it is a choice. Like it truly is. I know we don't always believe that, but it 100% is. And I think that, you know, we need to stand up for ourselves more in that way.
And I've been talking a lot about this, and I know I think that you would agree. The piece that we often forget as parents is that intentionality, right? We have intention for almost every other aspect of our life, our career, our body, our food intake, but we forget to be very intentional about what we want our family to represent and what we want to represent as parents. And so if we can stick to that intentionality, well, my intention is not to be a stressed out maniac because I'm trying to give 220%, you know, in my life, which is completely impossible. And so therefore I'm screaming on the way to soccer, right? Because what else can you do?
Right.
You know, and so let's take a step back and be intentional. If I'm not intending to be stressed, then how can I not be? And if not going to soccer is that, then I'm going to give it up, you know?
Right.
I one of the other things I've been saying to parents, you know, when their kid is in a rough spot and they don't know where to go and they're a really type A working mom, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is tough for them. They want to will it to be better. You know, I can fix anything mentality. And I try to get them to take a breath, but to hold that part of them that's true too. And so I say, you know, failure's not an option when it comes to this relationship, not so much when it comes to the grades and the productivity of the child, but the failure's not an option for the relationship. And that, I think, can often give pause to a mom who thinks that we need to be in this producing society where we have a product and we produce things all the time, which shows our value apparently.
Yeah, I totally agree. I like to work with my clients and challenge them to, I ask the question of, what does success mean to you?
Mm.
And I think that that's something as we go throughout our, from a career perspective, as we go throughout our career, I'm not sure that we do, I'll speak for myself. I never did a good job of resetting and reevaluating. I had my vision of success and that was the vision, right? It takes a lot and you're not always, it's like, oh, what's your 5-year plan? What's your 10-year plan? All of that type of thing. But what happens when your 5-year plan doesn't work anymore? Like, and that's okay. And how do you kind of learn and adapt to that? So I think that that's a big one. And also asking yourself, what is success? I mean, success can be getting to work a 40-hour week and being done, truly being done, right?
Mm-hmm.
And giving moms, especially, permission that's okay, you know, that definition is okay if that's what you want it to be.
Right.
And I think you can do that with what does a successful relationship look like with my child today and this week? And that's the other really big thing that I work with my mom clients on, is that the way it is today, I love to say it's all a phase. It's only a phase and it's all a phase. And as moms with older children, I think we really understand that, because when you're in the middle of it, you think this is going to be forever. You know, diapers are going to be forever. Waking up in the middle of the night is going to be forever. And it really isn't. And I know that it's easy for me to say in hindsight, and for anybody listening who's in the middle of it, you can do it. We've all been there, right? But your definition of success changes with every phase that your kids go through, with every phase that your job goes through, with every phase that the way your family looks goes through. And I don't think that is emphasized enough to us, in this, especially, I'll say the American culture. It's Success means productivity, and that's the definition of success, and march on.
Right. Yeah, there is no one singular definition. And if you don't have adaptability, I mean, I ask my clients, how do you want to maneuver? What's your intention for maneuvering through COVID? So when you're in the rearview mirror, what do you want your kids to say? That, you know, they're not going to remember the math worksheet that they missed, or they're not going to remember that they didn't get to read the second grade book that they were supposed to, that all other second graders in the world has read, but they're going to remember how you got through as a family, because they're going to remember the feeling that was in the home. And to me, that's way more a measure of success than reading the book that all second graders read or whatever it is. So I love what you're saying to your clients. What I'd love to know is, from a managerial standpoint, how would you pose that to an employee that works with you? So I think sometimes we're very reticent and concerned as an employer to ask our, you know, workers and employees about their home life and what even goals that are overarching and maybe be in both their work life and their home life, because as we know, and as you and I've talked about it, they're intertwined. Mm-hmm. But I've been hearing a lot about how impactful and imperative all voices at all levels at the table actually help an employer's bottom line, and they don't realize that often. So tell me how you would, you know, bring that into your work and your professional life as mm-hmm. as a manager.
Yeah, certainly. And that's been something that fortunately I've been pretty open, and I think that my employees have been able to be pretty open with me on that. But specifically, I remember one discussion I had with one of my employees who at the time had two kids under two, and she was struggling. And I said, well, what are you struggling with? And she said, at work specifically, and she said, well, I just don't feel like I'm getting any better. And I was like, well, and I knew what she meant was like progressing and like delivering higher and higher and higher quality of analysis and things like that. And I said, well, that's okay. Like, what you're delivering is good work, and that's all you need to do. And if that's your goal for the next, let's just put that as your goal for the next 3 months, maintain status quo.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. And so that was like a big revelation for me, because I certainly had not like prepared that speech anywhere before that. And nobody had ever told me that was okay, right?
Yeah.
But it is this kind of, again, especially for the type A's, of I got to get better. I got to get, you know, this is my client. I got to work to get the bigger client. And then I got to work to one up and get the bigger client. And I have to constantly be striving to pull that next gold ring or that next gold ring. And I think what's hard for early mother working moms is coming to terms with kind of how much do you want to keep striving? And that is completely okay. But if that's the path you're going to take, then you really have to adjust maybe some of your choices and get more help at home. You can't mm-hmm. be the one that does all the laundry and cooks all the meals and is shooting for the C-suite all at the same, like that's a recipe for burnout in my opinion, right? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, telling those mid-level manager moms or those moms who've just shifted into a different career or a new career that you may have to go into neutral or you may have to stay in second gear for longer than you expect. And that's okay too.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what I try to really work with, especially with the moms that work for me, work around me, is what is it that you want? Mm-hmm. What is it that would help you out? Especially in the pre-COVID times, one mom told me like, if I could just work from home on Friday, we didn't typically do work from home on Friday, but if I could work from home on Friday and get the laundry done in between meetings, mm-hmm. like that would change my whole weekend.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, you know, can you be on all the meetings? Can you still get all, you know, can you hit all your hit all your deliverables and everything else? And it was like, yes, of course. You know, I just want to be able to get the laundry done before and it's small things like that, that I think as management mm-hmm. that we need to consider. That's not a bad ask. Like that's an easy fix for something that's going to take the mental and the physical load off of her and bring her stress level down at home and maybe even provide her with a little time for self-care in the midst of it all. So
I just have to pause right there and just tell you, like, I have the chills and I'm just, I have tears in my eyes too at the same time. Like, I wish you could train other managers. What you just described has so much in it. There's just so much there. Number one, you gave a new mom who had two kids under two permission to be a good mom, right? She's saying, I should be doing better. And you're like, but wait, like, do you know that you have two kids and that you don't always have to shoot for the moon? Mm-hmm. That right now, if you're delivering, you're so good. Like, that is so good, because a type A person like that, they never feel good enough. Mm-hmm. It's true. Never good enough. And what ends up happening from a psychological view, both you and I know this, is when you feel not good enough times, you could possibly completely stop. And I mean that in that you give up. I'm a failure. So you either quit the workforce, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe you end up in a ball. Maybe you end up in bed for 7 weeks. So now you're not being a mom. You're not working. You know, there's so much in there. And to me, your allowance and giving her permission and hearing her voice where she could be that vulnerable and tell you that she felt like she should be doing more. I think you should train all managers across the United States. There's so much there. It seems so simple. And then let's talk about the girl who wants to get her laundry done on Fridays. I mean, because you know that you even said if she has a teeny, teeny bit of time for self-care, you know she's going to be better at work the next week.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and the whole weekend she isn't running around crazed because she couldn't get any laundry done during the week. So. Yep. It's just so, it seems so simplistic. It seems so commonsensical. And yet I believe most managers don't allow for that. And it's a shame. They're cutting off their nose to spite their face.
Yeah, it really is. And I write a lot about that in the blog, of just empowerment and asking for what you think you need. Mm-hmm. Because you never know. And you never know why or why not. And so I would love to train all managers, because I think that we get tied up in the rules of everything. And I think that the rules are going to change. That's what I really hope for. Right. And I think that if we're going to, we'll survive, but mentally, in a very mental well-being way of survive these next few months, however school looks, whatever school looks like, right? I know everybody is kind of having different ways that it might look. Kids might go to school half the day. They might go to school Monday and Wednesday, so the other students can go Tuesday and Thursday. Like, there's just so many different options, and none of them are normal. Right. We, our whole lives are built around us going to work and the kids going to work or daycare to mirror that time. I would almost say with 100% certainty, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so how do we move forward? And the only way to move forward where we all get to keep our mental health is to be flexible like that, mm-hmm. and to think outside the box. And, you know, maybe Zoom meetings are only from noon to 3 p.m. And if you can't meet during noon to 3 p.m., then like you have to plan for something else. Maybe the next meeting's at 6 p.m. or something like that. That's where I really think that companies have to think about, what is it that makes us productive? What is it that makes us profitable, obviously? Mm-hmm. And then think outside the box and
right.
get create, like, there's no dumb ideas, right? Throw them all up against the wall and see what happens, because it's not one size fits all anymore.
Yeah. I think that everybody needs to use their voice too, because that's where, and to your point, and if somebody can't hear them, then maybe it's not the place for you. But if you can use your voice and be vulnerable, like that woman was with you, I feel like communication just begets more communication, and there's more understanding, and you know where someone's coming from. And therefore we can, you know, maybe perhaps, you know, continue to decrease the wage gap, you know, and decrease the gender gap. And we can decrease the amount of women who are leaving the workforce. Mm-hmm. Because again, for the bottom line, we need those voices. We need women who have a different point of view, who come to the workforce because of culture, with more empathy, who can then share that empathetic culture with their male counterparts, not even to mention their husbands. We didn't get into much of that, Casey, but maybe we could have a part two where we really talk about working dads, mm-hmm. and what yeah. they can contribute, you know, most particularly to the home life, that maybe they're just unaware of, they don't know what they don't know, but that would really help women to then focus a little more on their careers.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. We can definitely have, it's, you know, it's all about communication, and it's all about helping each other, right?
Yes.
It's about the husbands and the wives, or the, you know, whoever's in the household helping, right?
Yes.
Even your 2-year-old, your 3-year-old picking up their own toys, putting their own clothes in the drawer, even if they get thrown in the drawer, right?
Like, right.
It's about everybody contributing. And the same way at work, it's, we have to stop thinking that we have to do everything on our own to prove how strong we are, right? We have to ask for help. We have to ask for what we need and see how we can work together to create like the best solution for everybody. The company included, right? Profitability included. So
yeah, I think that we're going back to community is what you're mm-hmm. saying. And maybe yeah. we didn't have a very community style workforce, but maybe it's time, as you said, to look at it in a different way. Stay-at-home moms used to have kind of a community, right? Like, one was not good at cooking, but the one that was cooked, and the other one was good at art projects with the kids, and the other one was good at playing baseball with them, and the other one was good at reading or taking them to the library. And in the 60s, they kind of did that, right? Like, mm-hmm. it was more of a community amongst those women. And for a while, I feel like women were just against other women or against stay-at-home women or whatever it was. And now if we could all be there for each other, I think that, you know, like you are for your employees, like you are for your clients, we will then be raising children who are happy, who are successful in their own definition. So
exactly right. Exactly
yeah.
right.
Well, thank you so much, Casey. We're going to have a part two. We just said it right
so.
Here.
I guess so. We'll talk
right.
next time.
All right. And we will put your information and contact information in the notes for this podcast.
Thanks, Cara.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Mindfulness at Work. If you felt inspired by our conversation, we hope you'll share our podcast with your friends and colleagues.